in this edition of the News Review, the U.S. House Speaker says President Donald Trump's decision to impose tariffs on European imports misses the opportunity of gaining an economic leverage over China. Nancy Pelosi said the U.S. and the EU could join forces to form what she described as the biggest market in the world. She noted that the combined power could be used in negotiations with China. Last week, Trump announced that Washington will levy taxes on $11 billion worth of products from the EU. He quoted the WTO as saying that the EU's subsidies for the plane maker Airbus have adversely impacted the United States. On Monday, the European Commission pulled up a tariff list of U.S. imports worth nearly $23 billion U.S. dollars in retaliation for Trump's decision. Now to discuss that more, we're joined by Mr. David Barkin, author and professor of economics, joining us from Mexico City, and Ian Williams, Foreign Policy in Focus, from Foreign Policy in Focus, an economic expert, joining us live from New York. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for joining us on this edition of the News Review. Now, this idea of Nancy Pelosi seems to be quite interesting, having the U.S. and the EU form an alliance. While we do understand that the EU itself right now is at a point where it is struggling by keeping its own members in the alliance. Now, let's begin with Mr. Barkin from Mexico City. If you could please tell us what your opinion is.
I think that the notion that the United States is trying to control China and at the same time impose tariffs on Europe can only hurt the United States. The struggle between Airbus and Boeing on who is subsidizing their planes more has been going on for about two decades. And the WTO finding about the European subsidies is matched by similar findings by the same WTO on U.S. On U.S. government subsidies to Boeing for its airplane development programs. So it seems to me that what we're finding here is just another excuse to create a United States unique, individualistic, well, not individualistic, one country, island, that is trying to get the whole world to come into alignment with what Trump considers to be U.S. interests. The similar actions in China are having extraordinary impact in Southeast Asia, where the countries are aligning themselves right now to take advantage of the opening of the Chinese markets and to intensify bilateral trade within Asia. So that it seems to me that both of these arms of the Trump, if you wish, foreign economic policy, are only going to lead to increased prices and perhaps even serious declines in production within various parts of the United States.
Thank you very much. Let's turn to Mr. Ian Williams from New York. Mr. Williams, what is your opinion? Where did this idea of the United States and EU becoming one single market come from? Isn't that too imaginative from the part of Nancy Pelosi to bring up even this idea, considering the trade wars?
Sorry, it has been discussed before because it makes obvious sense. You know, in some ways, the EU and the US are more natural allies. They both have to some extent, legitimate grievances against the against China, no matter how untoward the way that the Americans are pursuing this. And together, they could actually have some effect. It's already clear that the Chinese are moderating on some of their bottom lines. They're relaxing on intellectual property. They're relaxing on some of the internal trade barriers. But on the other hand, the Europeans are looking and thinking, hang on, those people across the Atlantic are talking about free trade, and they don't believe in it. I mean, Trump's idea, it's America first and last, and in the middle, and all the way through. It's America only. There's no room in it for the EU. And they are, you know, I think the US is going to have to be very careful. What Pelosi is saying makes sense from a geopolitical point of view. They don't have to sign a treaty. They don't have to love each other, but they could cooperate. But I think the way that Trump is playing it, he's far more likely to provoke a de facto alliance between the EU and China and others against American attempts to push itself in places it's not really intended, whether it's by enforcing sanctions that other countries don't agree with on, for example, Iran. And, you know, in the end, it comes down to what is good for America is not necessarily good for everybody else, but you can actually hack a deal between different people. You can have trade agreements. And what he's doing now is extremely dangerous. Everything that's said about, he said about the Airbus can be said about Boeing. But I don't know whether he's noticed, but the difference is the Airbuses are flying in the air, whereas the Boeings are crashing out of the air and aren't selling very much. So he's in a very dangerous position with this. And also, I mean, I'm sorry, but all the signs are there's a bubble about to burst. And these type of actions have untoward consequences, just like the assassin shot in Sarajevo in 1945. You can almost envisage where the collapse of one major company. If Boeing went bankrupt, I think that the consequences for the world financial system, the American financial system, would be quite high. And that is not totally off the cards. I mean, if they can't get those, if they can't get their airliners up in the air, they face massive claims from the airlines and from everybody else, and also massive costs because they have all of these planes in production and on the way that they can't sell. And to sell them, they need cooperation. I mean, we have to remember what happened. For the first time, the rest of the world said, no, we don't trust the FAA and Boeing. We've discovered the FAA is using Boeing to act as its own policeman. We don't want that. We want guarantees that these planes are not going to drop out of the air ad lib. And they insisted. It was other countries grounded it, not the FAA, which is almost unprecedented. And I think in its own little way, it shows the way things are going. The US hegemony is evaporating more and more rapidly with each passing week.
Thank you very much, Mr. Williams. Yes, as you mentioned so yourself, this may be a good idea, but obviously this is not the course that over the past 2 years the Trump administration has been taking with its protectionist policies, which raises the question why Nancy Pelosi would be optimistic enough to bring that up. Let's turn back to Mr. David Barkin. Mr. Barkin, who is benefiting from these trade wars that the U.S. Has taken on with regards to China, with regards to regional countries like Canada, and of course the EU?
I think we have to understand what's going on with these so-called trade wars as Trump is running for re-election as president. I think that there's very, very little evidence that any important economic group within the United States is a prime beneficiary of this. But Trump has created an image, a persona, that clearly wants to put America, as they say, MAGA, make America great again. And that has nothing to do with re-injecting strength into the U.S. Economic structure. We're seeing all parts of the country suffering at this particular period. You have a number of European companies that have decided to cut back on their investment expansion programs, and you have the farm areas tremendously hurt by the decisions by the Trump administration and by the Chinese to limit exports and redirect the trade to other parts of the world. South America and Southeast Asia are the particularly beneficiaries. And we have to think about that in terms of China's relatively midterm policy of infrastructure building, the new Silk Road international policy, which is incorporating a large number of countries all over that are encircling the world, including some in what the U.S. considered to be its backyard. I'll speak specifically of Philippines and Indonesia. And I think that it's very, very important then to understand that what Trump is doing is playing a re-election campaign a little, perhaps a little early, but in the United States, I guess the 2020 elections have already campaigns have already started. So I think we have to understand it in terms of domestic policies, now politics, rather than in terms of some rational economic scheme. Pelosi has a completely different agenda. She doesn't have any problem for being reelected. And the Democrats are hoping that by proposing a new strategy of strengthening the U.S. industrial and farm belt with agreements across the Atlantic, they can make more sense to the industrial and agricultural elite.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barkin. Let's turn back to Mr. Ian Williams. We're running out of time, so if you could please wrap your thought up as quickly as you can. In terms of domestic policy, let's take the steel imports of the United States, for example, and the tariffs on steel, which is a good example. This does not seem to be benefiting anyone. Of course, Trump did mention that this has brought a lot of jobs back in the steel industry, but then those factories that need steel as raw material to produce the things they need, like nail factories or car factories, have been suffering a lot. So while there have been maybe in one of the states about 12,000 jobs that were created, another 400 were lost in return. So who exactly do you think is winning in this trade war?
Well, some of the steel companies were, but not many. Overall, it's rhetorical. I'm not quite sure it's an economic policy as much as it's a set of reflexive prejudices. And but as your previous speaker pointed out, I think these reflexive prejudices reflect the prejudices of middle America. So what he's saying appeals to them, and you know, reality doesn't really impinge upon such prejudices. The fact that the economy is being ruined by them, it's like the famous tax cuts. I mean, both several Republican administrations now have allegedly reduced taxes, run up huge deficits, and then run on reducing the deficit to stop government spending. Nobody seems to remember. They get away with it because the prejudices are in harmony with those of their core voters more often than not. And there's a complete disconnect between the fact that the healthcare and social security checks are diminishing and Trump is giving away tax breaks to millionaires. They do not have joined up thinking like this. There's no great economist vision. It's a string of reflexive prejudices, which actually plays out fortuitously very well politically in America.
Thank you very much, Mr. David Barkin, author and professor of economics from Mexico City, and Mr. Ian Williams from Foreign Policy in Focus, an economic expert, joining us live from New York. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for elaborating on this issue. And that brings us to the end of this edition of the News Review. Thank you for watching.